Good evening. I'm going to apologize to Joe. I think I threw him off a little bit by walking up here. All right. Tonight, we're going to focus on, this is a lesson that I've been wanting to preach for some time. It's been on my mind for a long time, honestly, perhaps since I started preaching, and I've spoken about this during my career on and off. But I, in my own preaching, I try not to do this, but I can tell you that in my personal life, what we're going to talk about tonight is something that I struggle with too. We all struggle with this, I think, to some degree. Again, professionally, I try not to, but you know, sometimes it just turns out that way. But it's so much easier in this life to just be negative. It's so easy to do that. And because it's easy, we should be trying to push ourselves to be more positive. And if you notice here, I put our little subtitle, looking for solutions instead of problems. Now, to start us out, obviously, we have to recognize that thinking perhaps negatively or breaking down things, this is a natural part of finding solutions. If we're looking for solutions, we first have to identify the problem. I'm willing to admit that, and I'm willing to agree with it. There is a time to discuss failings or shortcomings. If you'll turn with me, I've got three examples here from the Bible that I think will help us with this. If you'll turn with me first to Galatians chapter 2. Galatians chapter 2. Galatians chapter 2, beginning in verse 11. But when Cephas came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face because he stood condemned. For prior to the coming of certain men from James, he used to eat with the Gentiles. But when they came, he began to withdraw and hold himself aloof, fearing the party of the circumcision. The rest of the Jews joined him in hypocrisy, with the result that even Barnabas was carried away by their hypocrisy. There is a time to point out these things. He says, I withstood him to his face. And then he's going to go through a discourse. He's going to quote a discourse that he had with Peter about this moment. So looking at what's happening here, Paul felt it necessary, and I would say it was necessary, to speak up. Whether it be on behalf of the Christian Gentiles in the area, or even just because of Peter's great position in the church and among God's people, but it needed to be said. And so Paul was the one to say it. To point out problems has its moment in time. Or how about Matthew 18? Matthew 18, verse 15. If your brother sins, go and show him his fault in private. If he listens to you, you've won your brother. But if he does not listen to you, take one or two more with you, so that by the mouth of two or three witnesses, every fact may be confirmed. But if he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. If he refuses to listen even to the church, let him be to you as a Gentile and a tax collector. Truly I say to you, whatever you bind on earth shall have been bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth shall have been loosed in heaven. Again I say to you that if two of you agree on earth about anything that they may ask, it shall be done for them by my Father who is in heaven. For where two or three have gathered together in my name, I'm there in their midst. Then Peter came and said to him, Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Up to seven times? And Jesus said, I do not say to you up to seven times, but up to 70 times seven. And I don't want to get too deeply into Matthew 18 here, because we'll talk about it at the end of this slide here in just a moment. But sometimes we need to tell our brothers if they have sinned against us in some way. Sometimes that needs to be communicated. Or how about Acts chapter 18? Acts chapter 18. Starting in verse 24. I believe, yes, I am in the wrong chapter. I was sitting there going, I think I've missed something. Okay, Acts chapter 18. I was in chapter 19. That's why I was confused. Acts chapter 18, verse 24. Now a Jew named Apollos, an Alexandrian by birth, an eloquent man, came to Ephesus, and he was mighty in the scriptures. This man had been instructed in the way of the Lord, and being fervent in spirit, he was speaking and teaching accurately the things concerning Jesus, being acquainted only with the baptism of John, and he began to speak out boldly in the synagogue. But when Priscilla and Aquila heard him, they took him aside and explained to him the way of God more accurately. And when he wanted to go across to Achaia, the brethren encouraged him and wrote to the disciples to welcome him, and when he had arrived, he greatly helped those who had believed through grace, for he powerfully refuted the Jews in public, demonstrating by the scriptures that Jesus was the Christ. And notice that the way Aquila and Priscilla handled this, they ended up creating someone who was even better equipped. Apollos was already doing great work, and they ended up equipping someone to do even better work. So, yes, the point needed to be pointed out to Apollos. There might be more that you're not understanding. When we are trying to identify errors that perhaps other churches or Christians are involving themselves in, or perhaps looking at what's going on around us with our government or our culture, they often get included in this as well, that sometimes we need to talk about these things and point out the faults and the problems in logic or in evidence. Those have necessary applications in our life. So I'm not trying to say tonight, never be negative. It is all right to a point. To a point. And that's what we're going to talk about for the rest of this evening. What I want you to notice, though, with these passages that we were just reading, we're not airing grievances. For instance, Matthew 18. I don't go to my brother and show him his fault because I'm just trying to air grievances. Just because I want something out of it. Just because I'm looking for an apology. Once you start doing that, you've gone too far. And notice again with Paul in Galatians chapter 2. It wasn't just an airing of grievances. It was addressing the fact that Peter was warping their understanding of the gospel. That suddenly there was this idea of, well, perhaps maybe we do need to become Jews before we become Christians. No, that wasn't the gospel. So there is a point. There is a time to point out faults and errors. But it is not to the airing of grievances. It is for their benefit. It's for someone else's benefit when we're going to point out errors. So I want us to get sort of a different definition going here. Because we've talked about sort of being negative as in coming down and pointing out errors, but that's not entirely what I want us to talk about tonight. When I use words like positive versus negative, if you remember, the sub-point here is looking for solutions instead of problems. It's easier to focus on problems. It's much harder to find solutions, especially workable solutions. And so that's what we need to be focused on, is being proactive versus reactive. For me, from an evangelistic standpoint, What I often try to do is I try to focus not on what isn't the truth, but what is the truth. Are there times to talk about people are saying this is the truth and it's not? Of course. Of course there are times to talk about that. But the more and more we can talk about what the truth is, then the errors become more apparent. If I've only taught you about the errors, we may not have a full grasp on why or what truth is. This is a conversation we had, David, Patrick, and I had many times with the high schoolers in this last quarter. We were talking about denominational errors. And I was trying to get the high schoolers to understand, it doesn't really help us to just point. This is an error. Great. Why is it an error? That's a much more important discussion. Why is this an error? Let's talk about what the truth really is. Now I go back and say, okay, do you see that this is an error now? When I can tell you what is, then it's easier to point out what isn't. But if I've only ever told you what it isn't, have you ever thought about this? Try teaching a child what a horse is by telling them all the things it's not. It doesn't have scales. It doesn't breathe in the water. It isn't 7 or 8 feet tall. It doesn't have 6 legs or 2 legs. Well, now you're going to show them a dog and they're going to say horse, and you can't really blame them, can you? Because you told them what all it isn't. There's a lot of things that don't fit the isn'ts. But if I can tell you what it is, then whenever a child sees a horse, they're going to say, it's a horse. Yes, sir. It is a horse. Because I told you what it is. That's an oversimplified illustration, but it extrapolates out to the same goal, to the same end. If I sit here and tell you what it isn't, you're still going to have trouble with what it is. If I reverse the process and tell you what it is, then what it isn't becomes much more apparent. So let's make an application here. Let's look at a very common mistake. Okay? And the illustration for this mistake is going to come from John chapter 6. That's why I asked Clint to read from John chapter 6. John chapter 6, beginning in verse 48. I am the bread of life. Your fathers ate the manna in the wilderness and they died. This is the bread which comes down out of heaven so that one may eat of it and not die. I am the living bread that came down out of heaven. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever. And the bread also which I will give for the life of the whole world is my flesh. Anyone taking 2 seconds to think about what Jesus is talking about here is going to get it. Right? Even by today's standards, you pull someone off the street, say, let me read this to you, and then you say, is he talking about cannibalism? Is going to tell you no. The problem. Then the Jews begin to argue with one another, saying, how can this man give us flesh to eat? Are you kidding me? That's our debate right now. And it seems that Jesus is equally surprised, but I love that instead of Jesus trying to explain himself, he doubles down. I love it. Jesus said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life in yourselves. Yeah, you heard me. You heard me say that. He who eats my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life, and I will raise him up on the last day. For my flesh is true food, and my blood is true drink. He who eats my flesh and drinks my blood abides in me, and I in him. As the living Father sent me, and I live because of the Father, so he who eats me will also live because of me. This is the bread which came down out of heaven, not as the fathers ate and died. He who eats this bread will live forever. Later, we're going to expand our context here. We're going to look a little bit deeper at either side of this, but this is sort of a very common mistake that sometimes we make, myself included, that the Pharisees were making as well here. What they're doing is they're hearing Jesus say something, and they're putting up what we call blinders. Tim and I have actually had a few discussions about this sort of phenomenon that sometimes happens. And the way that he has illustrated it to me, and I thought it was a good illustration, so I wanted to show you here. Can anyone identify what this is?
Sure.
Good? Okay. Particularly a great white shark. And you'll notice, actually it might be visible to you out there. So here is the eye, and you can actually see the pupil right here. And there's a little bit of an iris coming off it right here. So it's actually looking just about right at the camera, which is a little creepy. But what tends to happen, what always happens is when a shark, particularly a great white shark, goes in for an attack, they roll their eye back into their heads. And it has this protective layer back here. It's sort of an eyelid. They do have eyelids. This isn't technically an eyelid. But what this does is it protects the eye here. And notice it's white. We're looking at the back of the eye. So they roll back as they're going in for an attack. And this is what we have a tendency to do. I hear something or I see something, and then I go in for the attack and I put my blinders on. And this is being reactive. This is thinking negatively. I'm going in for an attack. I'm going for the kill. We are not sharks. We have been blessed by God with a higher order intelligence. We don't need to do this. We can take a step back and take some time to think about what is about to happen. And I can see it with my eyes. I can see it straight on before I make a decision. This often happens when we feel very justified. When I feel justified, then I tend to put my blinders on. I roll my eyes back and go in for the kill. And here's the deal. Because most often this is when we're fighting for truth. When we're fighting for truth, it's very easy to point out the negative instead of trying to think about the positive. And I'll tell you, preachers have just as bad, if not a worse, habit of doing this as anybody else. It's very easy to write sermons that pick apart and break down. That's easier. Finding a solution is so much harder. Talking about what something is so much harder. It's easier when you know what you're talking about, but it's still the harder of the two options. And so because I'm defending the truth, then I assume that what's about to come out of my mouth is all right. And too often it's not. Now, I want us to understand what we're not talking about here. If you think that I've said something that's wrong up here, please come to me. That's not what this is about. Please come and talk to me. I'm not saying leave me alone. Don't point out if I've done something wrong. That's not the point here. Because again, I'm also speaking to myself here. That what often happens is I get something in my head and I am going to act upon it. And I don't have all the information that I need. What we should do, right? We're not going to talk about what we shouldn't do. What should we do? First, listen. We're going to break this down to a little bit more of an exhaustive list later, but we'll give a Cliff's Notes here at first. Truly listen or truly see what's going on in front of you. Then you need to mull it over. Then you need to ask yourself, is it true or is it false? Regardless of your gut reaction to it, is it true or is it false? And then whatever answer you come to, then you need to answer, could my answer to that be wrong? Do you see how much more effort I have to put in before anything comes out of my mouth? And this is why I and anybody else has trouble doing this on a regular basis. It takes more mental effort to do this. But instead, I see or I hear and I attack. I roll my eyes back and I go in for the kill. And have you ever done that before where you start getting into this conversation with someone because they did or said something that you didn't approve of, and suddenly you start realizing, I didn't know everything I needed to know. Or I didn't hear you say that. And now you were defending whatever you thought was right, and I can't tell you how many times I've done it myself. We are all in the same boat. There is a danger to this kind of reactive negativity. We're going to look at four passages here. First is going to be Philippians chapter 2. Philippians chapter 2. So then, my beloved, just as you have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now, much more in my absence, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who is at work in you, both to will and to work for his good pleasure. Do all things without grumbling or disputing, so that you will prove yourselves to be blameless and innocent, children of God above reproach in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you appear as lights in the world, holding fast to the word of life, so that in the day of Christ I will have reason to glory, because I did not run in vain nor toil in vain. So what I love here is there's a negative, but there's mostly positives here. There's mostly proactive things here. He does have a sort of reactive thing, do all things without grumbling or disputing. But he said to them before, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. Prove yourselves blameless and innocent, children of God above reproach, and holding fast the word of life. Notice these are proactive things. If I am actively trying to do those things, then I find myself less and less reactive. That I'm just doing something because I heard something and now I'm going to lash out. Or I've seen something and then I'm just going to lash out. How about Colossians chapter 4? Colossians chapter 4. Conduct yourselves with wisdom toward outsiders, making the most of the opportunity. Let your speech always be with grace, as though seasoned with salt, so that you will know how you should respond to each person. Now, it seems that contextually, he's talking about with our speech being with grace, that it's part of conducting ourselves with wisdom toward outsiders. But obviously, that bit of wisdom extends both to outsiders and those within. Let your speech always be with grace. Instead of attacking, and that's actually, if we went back and looked at Galatians, that's one of the beautiful things I see about Peter Paul responding to Peter. Paul starts out simply with a question. And the point of the question is, do you realize what you're doing? Do you realize what you've done? By establishing this kind of behavior, you've sent a message. Paul doesn't start railing about how dare you, you're a respected member of this community, and no, that's not what he did. How about Aquila and Priscilla when we looked at them talking with Apollos? I can tell you, Aquila and Priscilla listened to everything Apollo said, otherwise they would not have been able to accurately teach him more effectively. They had to hear everything he had to say. And then they had to say, look, this is where you went wrong. We're stuck on the baptism of John. Let's understand what the baptism of Christ is truly about. And then he went on to do even more amazing things. I wish we had some of his writings, if he did any writings. I wish I could know more about Apollos and his work. But he went on to do amazing things, especially in the region of Achaia. But if all we ever do is just lash out reactively, we don't make better people, we make defensive people. Numbers 14. Numbers chapter 14. I'll spoil it for you before we read it. Right here, God is going to speak to the people. He's going to speak to Moses first, but he's going to tell them to tell the people that after all the grumbling and complaining that they've done, he has a message for them. The Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron saying, "How long shall I bear with this evil congregation who are grumbling against me? I have heard the complaints of the sons of Israel, which they are making against me. Say to them, as I live, says the Lord, just as you have spoken in my hearing, so I will surely do to you. Your corpses will fall in this wilderness. Even all your numbered men, according to your complete number, from 20 years old and upward, who have grumbled against me. Surely you have not come into the land in which I swore to settle you, except Caleb the son of Jephunneh and Joshua the son of Nun. Your children, however, whom you said would become a prey, I will bring them in, and they will know the land which you have rejected. But as for you, your corpses will fall in this wilderness. Your sons shall be shepherds for 40 years in the wilderness, and they will suffer for your unfaithfulness until your corpses lie in the wilderness. According to the number of days which you spied out the land, 40 days, for every day you shall bear your guilt a year, even 40 years, and you will know my opposition. I, the Lord, have spoken. Surely this I will do to all this evil congregation who are gathered together against me. In this wilderness they shall be destroyed, and there they will die." If you want to know what God thinks about what we're talking about tonight, there you go. You keep this up, your corpses are going to lie in the wilderness. No, thank you. I would rather not. I would rather find myself in the promised land. Now, Jesus is actually going to reference this somewhat. God here finally says enough is enough, but the people have been grumbling regularly. And this is where we're being reactive. The people are looking at their situation and they're reacting to what that is instead of proactively thinking ahead or thinking about other things. So at this moment, they are rejecting the fact that they could go into the land. The land is full of giants. There's no way we can take it. After all of what God has done to them to get them to this point, God saved them from he saved them out of Egyptian captivity in the first place. Then he saved them from the Egyptians pursuing them in two different ways. He gave them a wall of fire so that they could get through the Red Sea, and then also parting the Red Sea. And not just parting the Red Sea, but crashing it back down on the Egyptian army. Then they didn't have water, so God gave them water twice. Even when Moses didn't do it the way God told him to do it, God still provided water for his people. When the waters were poisonous, God cleaned their water. When they didn't have bread, God sent them manna. When they were fed up with the manna, then God gave them quail. Now finally they get to come into this land and they're showing these giant clusters of grapes and look, this land flowing with milk and honey. This is exactly what God promised us.
I don't know. Look at everything we've dealt with up to this point.
It's all reactive negativity. Instead of, look at all the great things God has done for us to get us to this point, surely a few giants are nothing that our God cannot handle.
Amen.
And you want to know who did say that? The two men who are going to get to go in. The two men that are going to survive all of their peers and their elders, Joshua and Caleb. Caleb is going to go on even further. I love Caleb. It's not enough to just go into the land. Where are all the giants? Let's take care of them. And Caleb goes and he takes all the giants' land from them. That's being proactive. That's being positive. Now let's turn back to our John chapter 6 context that we were reading from earlier. John chapter 6. Again, anyone with half a brain would have noticed what Jesus was really talking about. But even many of Jesus' own disciples, as we're going to read, are going to have trouble with this. I think the 12, in a rare moment, understood, at least to some degree. They at least knew that it was figurative, that Jesus isn't literally proclaiming cannibalism. But if we start in verse 41... we see we already have a problem starting from the very beginning. Therefore, the Jews were grumbling about him because he said, "I'm the bread that came down out of heaven." They were saying, "Is not this Jesus, the son of Joseph, whose father and mother we know? How does he now say, 'I have come down out of heaven'?" Jesus answered and said to them, "Do not grumble among yourselves. No one can come to me unless the Father who has sent me draws him, and I will raise him up on the last day." I want to go on to verse 49 here. "Your fathers ate the manna in the wilderness and they died." Was it from the eating of the manna? No. It's from the grumbling and the complaining and the lack of faith and trust in God. But go on to verse 59. "These things he said in the synagogue as he taught in Capernaum. Therefore, many of his disciples, when they heard this, said, 'This is a difficult statement. Who can listen to it?'" What they're saying there is, why would he think cannibalism is a good idea? That's what they're essentially saying. But Jesus, conscious that his disciples grumbled at this, said to them, "Does this cause you to stumble? What then if you see the Son of Man ascending to where he was before? It is the Spirit who gives life. The flesh profits nothing. The words that I have spoken to you are spirit and life. But there are some of you who do not believe." For Jesus knew from the beginning who they were who did not believe and who it was that would betray him. And he was saying, "For this reason I have said to you that no one can come to me unless it has been granted him from the Father." As a result of this, many of his disciples withdrew and were not walking with him anymore. You see what happened here? "Now, wait a minute, Jesus. We don't eat flesh and drink blood." Well, no duh. Of course, that's not what Jesus is suggesting. But that is the reactive mind. The reactive mind is the animal brain. That's thinking with your brain stem. That's what the animals do. God gave us a much more developed brain, one that has the strongest capabilities of reason, and yet we so often fail to use it. "Oh, whoa, we can't eat flesh and drink blood. That's too much." And Jesus says, "Really? Man, if you're having trouble with the figurative nature of this statement, what if you really saw something? How much more difficult is it going to be then?" And surely you've felt that. Someone arguing with you about something and you say, "Man, if you're really having trouble here, just wait until I get to the rest of my argument." Surely you've had discussions like that. I've had too many to count.
and not just being a preacher.
Being proactive and not reactive,
right? So I've been talking about, not just talking about noughts and isn'ts. So let's follow our own advice here. Let's talk about how to be proactive and not reactive.
The first thing we need to do is we need to stop and take a breath. You need time. Your brain needs to process things.
So often you've said this, right? I've done this watching TV where I go, what did they say? And then I rewind it and I turn the captions on and, oh, that's what they said.
Because sometimes your brain just, it thinks a lot of things on its own without you interfering. Stop and take a breath. Make sure that you have listened fully or seen everything that you need to see. That you've experienced everything you need to experience in the moment in order to make an informed decision. Put in as much mental effort as possible. Now that you're sure that you've listened fully and seen everything. So let me tell you, putting those blinders up is real easy and it happens really fast. Just like it does in a shark. It happens really fast in us. But roll your eyes back and start filtering through your mind. Now, this is why so many people have trouble doing this. Because it's so much easier to not put the mental effort to do what we ought to do. It's easy. It's easy to lash out. To think that you're brother or your sister has said something to you, or that they meant it in a particular way. Spouses, how many times has this happened with your spouse? You think that they said something, or you think that they meant something, and then either you handle it right then or you sit and you stew on it. I can't believe you said that to me. What did I say? Well, you said this. I'm sorry, that's not how I meant that. I can't tell you how many times I've said that to my wife. I'm sorry, I didn't mean it like that. It's just easier to react. Weigh all of your possible options. Now, there's a little snag to this step. There's a little kick to it. And if we're not paying attention, it'll kick us right out of what we ought to do. It's called giving the benefit of the doubt. Give the benefit of the doubt first. People, this is something I learned from my father a long time ago. People will dig their own holes, just stay back. You know why my father told me that? Because I was doing it. I just had that shovel and I was going crazy, digging myself a deeper and deeper hole trying to argue with him. Did it work? Of course not. Of course I was wrong. And of course I got in trouble. But that's what my father said. Son, you're going to learn one day that people can dig their own holes and you just step back. When we give people the benefit of the doubt, because sometimes taking a step back and looking at what's happening is actually going to give you a lot of information. You see someone digging at night by someone else's house, by someone's house, and you run up, what are you doing? Perhaps, and I've seen this, this is why I've seen this interaction happen. I was not a part of it, but I've seen it happen. Trying to take care of my mole problem. Sometimes you just need to take a step back and gather more information. Then things will start to make sense to you. But so often, the key to that is giving people the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they didn't say what I thought they said. Maybe they didn't mean to say it the way they said it. Or I saw them do this, but maybe there's a reason I'm not understanding. Maybe there's more to the situation that I don't know. So now your answer is maybe
stay away from the situation or gather more information before acting. And then we find the best possible solution. Do you see what all we've done? Do you see what all we didn't do when we just reacted? When we just say, now hold on a minute there. We didn't do this. Yes, there's a time and a place for saying, hey, I don't think that was the right thing. I don't think that's a good thing. I don't think that's true. There are always times for those moments. As we saw earlier, whether it be Priscilla and Aquila with Apollos, whether it be Paul with Peter, or whatever number of illustrations that we have in the Bible, they did all of this. You want to know how I know that? Because it all worked out. Peter stopped doing what Peter was doing. Apparently, we know later, Peter writes his epistles after Paul has written Galatians. And he speaks very highly of Paul and his work, so this clearly didn't create a rift between them. Priscilla and Aquila, Apollos goes on to do great things in Achaia and in other parts of the world. It works out. It's going to work out when the work of God is being accomplished. The work of God is not accomplished when we just react. Maybe what you heard was really said. But you know what? You know that now because you took a step back. You took a breath. You thought through it. You heard more of what that person has to say. Have you ever done that? You heard someone say something and you went, no, that's a good point. You ever done that? Can't tell you how many times I have. That was actually a good point. I didn't stop long enough to realize it was a good point. At least not at first. It's so much easier to be negative. It's so much easier to talk about what something isn't. Do you realize the gamut of things? Let's go back to our horse analogy. Do you realize the gamut of things I could tell you that a horse isn't? The list is far longer than me just telling you what a horse is, than trying to describe what a horse is. The list of telling you what a horse isn't is far longer. I've got more items at my disposal. But what I've done is I have buried myself in a hole too deep for me to climb out of. That's what we need to be concerned about today. And notice when we talked about this, sometimes this happens when, again, I've done it. I'm not preaching to you, I'm preaching to myself. I've done it. When I'm ready to defend the truth, that's where Satan goes, aha, I can get him. He thinks he's doing the right thing, and I'm going to get him. And that scheme of the devil that we talked about this morning suddenly becomes apparent. You've made a big mistake. Don't do that. Don't put your blinders on. Don't roll the eyes back in the head and attack. Don't always go in for the kill. Wait. There are a few snakes and beetles, spiders. And what they do is they inject and then they walk away. And they wait for something to take hold. And that might seem like a strange analogy, but let's do that with our own mind. It's okay if something happens, right? Something had to make you go, now hold on a second. But then you stop and you let it marinate. You wait for it. And then you'll have whatever desired outcome you want at the end of it. You got to be patient. You got to put more effort into it. You got to listen fully. You got to see clearly. And then you've got to let it sit.
So while you've been listening fully, and you've been letting the words that we've said this morning and tonight, perhaps at other times, maybe during the meeting that we just had, you've been letting them sit. You've been thinking about those things. And perhaps as a Christian tonight, you've realized that I am more reactive than I am proactive. I need to put more effort in how I communicate with my peers and with my brothers and sisters in Christ. Maybe that's you tonight. And we're all here to help each other. If maybe you've been thinking more along the lines of I've been living my life reactively instead of proactively, it's very easy to just say, I'm not going to listen to Jesus. I'm not going to listen to God. Christianity is a bunch of crackpot people. That's easy. It's easy to ignore evidence. It's easy to not look at the things that, quite honestly, are right in front of you. That's easy. Being proactive, becoming a Christian, that's hard. That takes effort. You're going to have a much better outcome at the end of it. So if that applies to you as well, then we're going to have an opportunity here. We're going to sing Christ Arose. That very point is why any of what we're talking about tonight is possible. Because Christ arose. And in his rising from the grave, you have hope. If you're not a Christian yet, you have hope. You have a way in which your life can be better than it was before. Because Christ arose. If you've already realized that, Christ didn't arise so you can sit there and nitpick and be reactive. He didn't arise for that. He arose for you to go out to work and to be proactive. Whatever you need tonight, please take advantage of this opportunity as we stand and as we sing. Lord.